Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
There was also my ego that was involved in this whole project. I just didn't realize it at the time. I thought that I had the best of intentions. I felt as if I had put forth a good faith effort to make this as successful as I could. In hindsight, and this is something that I've become accustomed to telling senior leaders when I've been asked to do an intervention for OD projects, and I come back to them and say, your project was doomed before the ink ever dried on the contract because of six fatal assumptions that you never tested. And I realized that was equally true in my case, that this team was doomed to fail before we ever brought them together. And it was because of a number of assumptions that I had made and had never really tested.
What happens when your strengths and your ego become the very things that derail you? My guest today, Chris Ferrando, thought he was building the perfect project with the best talent. Instead, it became a fabulous disaster. In this episode of Transformation Unfiltered, Chris opens up about his fatal assumptions, his blind spots, and the hard truth that what motivates you doesn't always motivate others. His story is a powerful reminder. Once we know better, it's on us to do better. And that real leadership starts with truly knowing yourself. Today, we welcome Chris Ferrando, who is our Senior Director of Organization Effectiveness, Talent Development, and Employee Learning and Development at Subway's World Franchise Organization. In plain terms, he's the guy making sure that Subway's people, processes, and strategies actually work together so the business and the people behind it can thrive. He also leads Subway's Military Veterans Group, a role close to his heart as Coast Guard Academy graduate and a veteran himself. Chris brings more than 20 years of experience shaping culture and leadership across industries, from beauty and pharma to sports and tech. He's held senior roles at L'Oreal, Medidata Solutions, Boehringer Ingelheim, and ESPN. Yes, that ESPN. Helping leaders and their teams find their footing and grow even stronger. Teaching has always been a part of his DNA. For the past two decades, Chris has also served as an adjunct instructor at Three Rivers Community College, sparking curiosity in courses like psychology, organizational behavior, and leadership. A proud graduate of the U.S. Coast Guard Academy, Chris spent 12 years on active duty, patrolling fisheries in Alaska, serving as the Coast Guard's liaison to the Pentagon for emerging technologies, and even returning to teach at the Academy. He holds multiple advanced degrees in organizational management and industrial and organizational psychology. And he's also finishing his PhD in IO psychology. Through all of it, one thing stands out. Chris is truly passionate about building leaders and cultures where people just don't show up to work. They grow, contribute, and belong. Chris, I'm so delighted you're here on Transformation Unfiltered today. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Yeah, just so excited that you can be here and share your story. We had the opportunity to talk a little bit beforehand, so I know that you are up for getting right into the messiness of it all, because you know we share a messy moment, but we end up sharing where that ends up at the end of the story. So why don't we start right there, smack dab in the middle of that time early in your career when it was messy.
Okay. So I was assistant vice president at a finance and insurance company, and I was heading up leadership development and talent management. And as part of our talent management initiatives, we often ran think tanks. And think tanks were generally comprised of high performers, and we mixed in high potentials with them and often gave them some type of assignment to complete. And it was really an opportunity for us to observe a leaderless group, but to really see who emerged as leaders. And later on, I had this idea of creating a super team. And what that entailed was taking our top 12 highest rated high potentials, putting them all on one team, and basically creating a super think tank. And they would be given an assignment from the executive leadership team. In this instance, it was if the company should consider getting into healthcare. So I made a pitch that we should put our highest potentials all on one team. The logic was that if we were getting great performance out of these other think tanks, just imagine what we could get out of a single team comprised of our highest rated high potentials.
So far, not so messy. What I'm hearing is great aspirations, really excited to get these top players of your organization together around a really pivotal question about if you enter this new space. So far, I'm excited because I love the idea of bringing people together around a problem.
On paper, it looked like it was going to be a home run. In hindsight, I can say that it was an abysmal failure.
Okay, so I wasn't expecting that. So let's unpack it a little bit. I would love to hear both versions, the brochure version and the what really happened.
So sure. So I'll share with you the cover page, and then I'll share with you what happens when you open the cover. So on the cover, you've got all of these high potentials. And these are individuals that consistently deliver high performance. They meet all their goals and objectives. They go above and beyond. They've got all of the traits, characteristics, qualities that we're looking for in our future leaders, as well as a number of them being considered as successors to C-suite positions. So we feel that there is a tremendous amount of leadership potential within this group. And just to be designated a high potential within this company, you would have gone through a personality assessment. There would have been a leadership effectiveness analysis instrument completed. You would have had to go through a critical thinking instrument, and in some cases, even complete a general cognitive ability test. So there's a considerable amount of psychological assessments that take place in order to ensure that we are getting the best and the brightest into this group of high potentials.
So you're investing in the people so that you can really make sure that you're using a data-based approach to not just be playing favorites, but to say, hey, based on all of these different assessments that are valid and reliable, we've got something special here.
Absolutely. And so conceptually, we're going to bring all of this intellectual and leadership horsepower into one team. We're going to give them a C-suite executive coach, and then they're going to be basically under my tutelage, basically on how to work together as a team and help guide them along this journey. And in doing so, we're also going to put them through a team assessment. In this case, we used what was called the innovation style profile. So if we're asking this team to be innovative and creative, we want to know what their creativity and innovation styles are to give us a sense of how well this team might perform.
Okay, so I'm drinking your Kool-Aid based on your brochure. And I imagine that your pitch that you made to senior leadership might have been this brochure, but a lot of the energy that I'm feeling from you about, dang, this is going to be amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was complete consensus and agreement that this was a strong initiative. And we had full support and backing from the entire C-suite.
And this was all your idea?
All my idea.
Okay. So pretty exciting. And was this kind of early in your career, middle road? Where were you in your trajectory there?
This was actually early in my business career. So I had spent the previous 12 years as an officer in the U.S. Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. I had spent the previous 7 years on teaching staff at the Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut. And this was my first foray into the business environment. And this was probably about year three into my business career at this company. And I would say that I was on an upward trajectory and had been listed as talent myself, which was an interesting position to be on the list of high potentials and simultaneously managing all of our high potential programs.
Yeah. What was that like? Tell me a little bit more about being in that position and being the why this amazing idea.
Sure. Our CEO at the time placed a very heavy emphasis on high potentials, leadership development. She was involved in absolutely every step, every selection. Talent review was basically a week-long process at her house in which a full psychological profile was developed and then analyzed by a retained IO psychologist who worked with the business leader and the CEO to truly assess the potential of every single individual in that talent pool to ensure that we were getting the best and the brightest. And then I was entrusted with ensuring that they were going to get adequate leadership development, both in and outside of the company. And so inside the company, we were constantly looking for experiential opportunities to not only grow and develop them, but to observe them as well.
Okay. And so there's a lot of learning on all different angles. They're not only doing this stuff, but they're in the fishbowl a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was probably what I would say a pinnacle moment. We've been building up with these smaller think tanks, but now it was like, okay, let's really kick it up and let's see what we can get when we put all of these people together focused on a single project. And like I said, it was a beautiful brochure, but when you get to the end of the story, you realize that what was on the cover is not what you actually experienced by the end.
Okay. I am feeling a little bit on the edge of my seat. I do want to ask you a question about you and all of this. You shared that you were also a high potential. So I imagine you had been through all the assessments and all of that stuff. Here you are with folks that are also high potentials. So you guys are all the stuff in the organization. And here you are like an up and comer within the organization with a CEO that really values talent development. And you're probably wanting to show her what you got. Tell me what was happening in your mind as you were crafting this perfect plan.
Sure. So the concept, we would have this team of high potentials. The executive coach was going to be the CHRO. And between the CHRO and this team was going to be Chris Ferrando. I'm thinking to myself, there's going to be a lot of exposure for this team. This is going to be an incredible opportunity for me to get exposure, for me to demonstrate particular skills and abilities, specifically with regards to being innovative, bold, and not being a part of a high performance or high potential team, but in some regards, leading the whole effort. So even though I wasn't in the team, there was still an agenda that involved me with this whole program.
Yeah. So seeing you in action was just the meta of this too, and you being the maestro of the architecture of this idea. So there was a lot of opportunity for exposure and for you to show your chops here.
Yeah. And really to further prove that I belonged on that list of high potentials, and maybe not only that I belonged on that list, but that I may have had a higher placement on that list.
I think that this is setting up to be a very fascinating story. So I don't see how it could go wrong. So help me to join you on the journey from perfect pitch, great brochure to what happened.
From a personal individual perspective, I was looking at this opportunity thinking to myself, okay, here is an opportunity for as a high potential to be a part of something very unique. I would almost say elite. So to be a part of an elite team that is going to be, that's being asked to be creative, innovative, to work on a strategic project that could have considerable financial implications for the company in the future, and really to just be a part of something unique and special, to learn. So a lot of what I would call, what I would say, intangibles. And
things that sound like they might be really important to you, things that you get jazzed about. Is that true?
My primary motivations, what gets me excited, is the opportunity to create new things, to think very strategically. I like to work with small teams of like-minded individuals that are all focused on a common mission and purpose. And I think that's a carryover from my time in the Coast Guard, where individuals were not incentivized by promotions, by reward, by bonuses, by pay raises, because none of that was ever offered in the military. You're basically given a job and a mission to do, and you're expected to do it. And it's what I like to call the military or the mission mindset, is you subordinate your ego, and it's all about being a part of a special team, working with other like-minded individuals to accomplish a goal or objective. And there is no individual component. You either all succeed as a team or you all fail, but there will not be a situation where a few of you succeeded and did your part, but the rest of you didn't. And so the mission was not accomplished. You're all in it together. And I was looking at this as the same way, is that these individuals are going to coalesce as a unified team. And we actually envision them almost as a self-directed, self-guided team that probably isn't going to need much direction and guidance from outside the group, because they're so strong as leaders that they're naturally going to be able to collectively guide this team to success.
So a lot of the stuff you came in with was checking a lot of boxes, strategic, creating something new, really connecting back to that thing that gave you a lot of energy from the Coast Guard, that, wow, this is going to be the dream team all working toward this mission. And I bet they're going to be such a dream team that they don't need a lot of direction.
Absolutely. To learn new things, exposure to senior leadership, and really to be challenged. And so in my mind, that's what people are looking for. People with drive and ambition want to be challenged. They want exposure. They want to learn new things. But as I would learn later on, that wasn't exactly the case.
Okay. So your whole body language, you're like, okay, now we have to get to the later on. And there was a lot of excitement and energy, and even your face was, now you're like, it wasn't the case. So are you ready to reveal a little bit of what unfolded as you watched this experiment really go on its path, its self-directed path?
We had all these strong personalities, a lot of confidence, a lot of ego, a lot of drive, a lot of ambition. But what we quickly realized was that with this self-guided team, without a designated leader, all of the individuals were beginning to assume that somebody else was going to step up and basically be the leader that kind of marshaled everyone and then provided structure, provided guidance, provided direction, really organized the whole effort. And so you basically had 12 people in which each one of them was waiting for one of the other 11 to basically step up and get this moving. And that simply didn't happen.
What was it that made that clear? Because I imagine it didn't happen overnight.
It was an observation that was made over a period of 2 weeks where we weren't seeing any progress. So then we had to bring the group together and say, hey, we're not seeing any progress. When we ask for updates, we're not being provided anything. And it doesn't seem like the team has really organized an effort in a direction. And so we really need someone to step up and to get this organized. And again, they all agreed, and we still weren't seeing much in the way of leadership being demonstrated. So we then brought them back together again, said the same thing. And then a few people started to step up, but it seemed to be more out of frustration than an actual desire to be the leader.
Were you the one that pulled the team together to say, hey, what's up here, guys?
I was.
So what was the internal dialogue as this was going down, especially since you had different ideas about what this would probably play out like?
In the course of this, I was having individual discussions with different members of the team just to get their perspective and why isn't this happening or why is this happening? And that's when I really began to realize that there may have been a design flaw in putting this together. So like as I had mentioned earlier, the incentive for me to get involved with projects like this is if you tell me it's an opportunity to be creative, an opportunity to be innovative, to learn, to be a part of something special, those are my motivations.
Yeah.
My reward. What we started to realize was that many of the individuals on this team didn't see being a part of this team as a reward in itself. They didn't see the work being a reward in itself. They actually thought of it more of as a burden and something that was going to get in the way of their regular day jobs.
If I was watching you, how did you come to that? How did you, what was it like when you noticed that?
Because we had spent a lot of time with each one of these individuals, getting to know them and then really analyzing them in their profiles, we began to realize that many of them were driven by power, titles, compensation, and promotions. So a lot of much more, I'll say, financially based or tangible rewards, which none of that was ever built into this plan or design. And that's when I realized that what was motivating me with this project was not motivating others, and that there was not a lot of motivation or energy amongst this group of individuals. But they at some point they did realize, and this was an interesting dynamic. They did understand that they were under a microscope. This is a project that was given to them by the C-suite. And I think they all started to realize that, hey, I'm a part of this team that the C-suite is now wondering why we're not able to provide any updates and it doesn't look like we're making any progress. We really should get going.
You know, when I hear should, I'm like, oh, that's said with a little bit of obligation or reluctance. It's not coming from inside.
No. And so a few individuals then really tried to take control of the team. And then that's where we started to notice a change, because now you have somebody that does step up, is trying to assert themselves and put themselves into a position of power to influence and control the team. But now you had others that were like, I don't want to be outshined by this individual. So then they started to assert themselves as the leader. And now you had two or three that started to emerge that wanted to go in different directions, but neither was formally appointed the leader. And so we had this continued inertia as the individuals that were trying to assert themselves were trying to pull the team in different directions. And then each of them were trying to build their own alliance and coalition within the group.
All that I can think of is the show Survivor. I feel like you are Jeff Probst and you just set up this interesting experiment that turned out to be every human for themselves.
Essentially, what ended up happening was just a few individuals of the team exerted what I would consider to be the minimal amount of effort necessary to produce a product and a presentation to present to the executive team that would bring this experiment or experience to a conclusion that would enable them to get back to doing their regular jobs. And it was after that where the CHRO, the vice president of talent, basically shared with me that they felt that the project had been a failure.
That seems hard to say out loud.
It was. And for the longest time, I looked at it as it was their failure. I did my part to basically bring you together as a team and you guys failed.
You blew it. The guys did.
You blew it. Not only did you blow it for yourselves, but inside I'm thinking you didn't deliver for me.
Ouch.
Yeah. There was me involved, but there was also my ego that was involved in this whole project. I just didn't realize it at the time. I thought that I had the best of intentions. I felt as if I had put forth a good faith effort to make this as successful as I could. In hindsight, and this is something that I've become accustomed to telling senior leaders when I've been asked to do an intervention for OD projects, and I come back to them and say, your project was doomed before the ink ever dried on the contract because of fixed fatal assumptions that you never tested. And I realized that was equally true in my case, that this team was doomed to fail before we ever brought them together. And it was because of a number of assumptions that I had made and had never really tested.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
So you were not really like Jeff Probst because he doesn't necessarily have the same skin in the game that you had. He can still be the outside observer. And you thought you might have been the outside observer, but then in hindsight, you realize, oh, wait, I had my ego tangled up in this a little bit. And I had made some of the fatal assumptions that I tell people now today, hey, this project was doomed from the start. Now you can see that. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. I assume that a team of all-stars would constitute an all-star team. I assume that you could take all of these high-performing, high-potential individuals and that they were motivated by the same things that I was, and that they were going to be equally excited to be a part of something elite, to be learning something new by given the opportunity to be innovative and creative and to have exposure to senior level executives. And I assume that all of those elements that I just mentioned were the reward of being a part of this experience, and not realizing that I may have been projecting my own motivations onto this group and expecting them to perform as if it was me.
Wow. I think that's a great thing to see from this angle, and also really brave to take a step back and say, that was my ego saying, how great is this going to be? You had maybe a little, I don't know, an echo chamber where, yeah, that'll be great, and that'll be great. And then this lesson came at you that was like, no, not everyone has the same motivators as I do.
One of the key learnings that I took away from it was to recognize the complexities and dynamics of bringing people together. And it shouldn't be based on a single designation that they're a high potential. So high potential plus high potential equals 3x high potential. That it's the proverbial iceberg, and that the majority of what is going to come to bear lies beneath the surface. And so you've really got to think about that. Another key learning, again, one that I share with a lot of leaders, but I would say that maybe I certainly didn't practice that much early in my career, is be conscious of the assumptions that you are making in literally everything that you do, every decision, every project. What fundamental assumptions are we making? And really, when you think about it, most of the successes that each one of us has accomplished and experienced was the result of what we knew and what we did with what we knew. And our biggest failures have often come because of what we didn't know. So the more that we can know, the better the outcomes of the decisions that we make. And along those lines, being conscious of how we may be projecting our own aspirations and our own desires into situations and onto other people with unrealistic expectations.
You're only human. You had a lifetime of experiences that taught you, this is motivating. This is great. Look at these things. And you had above the waterline, you could see how great these folks were from their assessments. It sounds like what was challenging was being able to name those assumptions that came honestly based on your prior experiences, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I often tell people that I don't really believe in failure because there's something that can be learned from everything. And so as long as you've learned something and that you can take that learning and apply it, then what you had previously done wasn't a failure. But if you do fail and you don't learn from it and you don't change, then I do say failure existed there. But I've always adopted that mentality, and that's led me to experiment, to do new things. But I have to ensure that there is some learning that is gained from what would otherwise be considered a failure or not meeting mine or someone else's expectations.
Yeah. So in addition to saying, hey, there's more than meets the eye, there's more here than just a high potential label, I need to call out my assumptions. And the other thing that you just shared was failure is part of the game. And so maybe I don't believe in failure unless it happens over and over again the same way, I don't learn from it. So hearkening back to Amy Edmondson and her spectrum of reasons for failure, if you don't learn from the thing, then you're not continuing to grow. But there, if you can gain some learning and shift your next experiment, that's progress.
One of the most prolific learning experiences of my career was years ago, I had the opportunity to go to a workshop being hosted by a guy by the name of Russ Acuff, which many people have not heard of. He has since passed, but he was professor emeritus at Wharton University, was one of the foremost experts in the field of systems thinking. And he gave a workshop in Connecticut many years ago at the age of 80. And I was like, I've got to register for this workshop quick because it is going to fill up the opportunity to engage with one of the world's greatest thinkers. And at the time, he had been listed as one of the world's 50 top thought leaders. He had been the personal consultant to the Shah of Iran and was a professor at Wharton at the time. So I get to this event, I register, I get to the event, and there only ended up being 7 of us there. And for him to get around the room, he needed a walker to assist him. But his mind was as sharp as any that I've ever engaged with. And having so few people, when it came time to lunch, I actually sat with him and had lunch with him and had a one-on-one conversation. And I said something to him that, based on everything that I've heard from you today, I'm starting to think that people are the root cause of every problem in an organization. And I'll never forget, he pounded his fist on the table and he said, people will always be the root cause of problems because only people can learn and change and adapt. He said, you can't blame the process. You can't blame the design. You can't blame structure, because all of those are inert. They can't change themselves. You have to look at the person that oversees the technology, that oversees and created the process, that put in place the design and the structure. And that completely changed how I started looking at organizations and their barriers to execution and why they're not as healthy and vital and successful as many would like to be. And so I started just focusing on the people aspect. And that kind of underlies a lot of what was learned in this whole experiment. Really is, it was never really about the design. It wasn't about the structure. It wasn't about the process. I thought it was a great process that we had put in place. But what it did is it highlighted the intricacies and the complexities of individuals.
And their dynamics between them.
Oh, absolutely. And the more individuals that you bring into kind of a confined space, there's going to be an exponential rise in the complexity. When you think about the complexity of managing a single relationship, and you think about power, motivation, aspiration, education, training, motivation, and those are just a few aspects of one individual. Now you bring two of those individuals together and the complexity rises. And now you bring a lot of individuals with varying motivations and aspirations and levels of confidence and ego and drive and ambition. And before long, it begins to look like a particle accelerator. And with everyone crashing into each other, creating a lot of chaos and a lot of energy, but not a lot of direction and production.
I think that idea is really powerful, because I think if it can be something that is chaotic energy, there might be something that could turn it into powerful energy for creating something awesome. So what do you think it is that you learned that could shift that?
Yeah. So I think one of the lessons that I took away from that, one was the value of using a variety of assessments to really get a better understanding of those complexities so that we could truly understand the variance in thinking style, in communication style, in managing conflict, in understanding different motivations and aspirations, and then stepping back and say, okay, how do we create an experience that appeals to and will motivate a very diverse and dynamic group of individuals?
Yeah, creating the experience is interesting. I think that it's not just about creating a system or the design. It's about those things plus the human factors. What's going to motivate? What's going to be the relationships between people and power dynamics and how they exchange information and things like that? And also, what's the thing that's they're all working for? So I think it's an addition. One of the things you also mentioned is you had these assessments to get a better understanding. And earlier in our conversation, you said something, if more, then you can do better. Was that part of that at all?
Yeah. Having more information and data on individuals helps you better understand and predict the dynamics, the behaviors, and the potential outcomes for a team. Identifying where are the strengths, where are the weaknesses, where are the commonalities, where are the differences, how do we leverage, and realizing that your best teams are going to have the greatest amount of diversity. Something that I've learned over the years is that wherever your greatest strength is, often lies your greatest weakness. But we don't think about the weakness because we only see it as a strength. So I often tell people that one of my greatest strengths, or what I've considered to be a greatest strength, is my confidence and my desire to talk. And so I can easily raise my hand and be the first one to start talking in a group. And I can talk for hours and not stop. And I've learned that from the community college students that I teach, where they'll have to say, "Mr. Frando, we've been going for over 2 hours. Can we have a break?" And I'll realize,
you're like, "I'm better."
And so one of the things that I learned years ago, and something that I've been focused on for my own development, is I had to be conscious of my talking and being the first to speak up, because I realized that what I consider to be a strength actually doubled as my greatest weakness, because I was not giving other people the opportunity to talk, and people were feeling like they didn't have the opportunity to talk. And so I've consciously had to stop being the first one to raise my hand or to talk. And a lot of that was driven by the fact that as a pathological extrovert, I don't like silence. It's discomforting. So if somebody asks a question and I'm waiting for somebody else to speak up, it can be awkward. And so then I'll just naturally speak up and then I'll start talking. And so I've realized that whether it's at an organizational level or at an individual level, wherever your greatest strength is, often lies your greatest weakness. So analyze your greatest strength and figure out, how is this simultaneously my greatest weakness?
And how do I use it with discretion, which is the last part you talked about? I've learned that I need to not be the first one. Yeah. In some cases, that doesn't mean you always be quiet. It just means, what am I doing by introducing this now?
Yeah. And I would say that a handmaiden to that is to control impulsiveness. And it may be that impulsiveness to, I want to be the one that is credited with this idea. I want to be the one that implemented this. But the problem is, you didn't stop to think about what assumptions you are making before you impulsively shared this or impulsively started to execute on it. In the rush to meet your own personal need, you didn't think about the group, the larger group, or the organization, or the team, or the department. Your rush to get credit for your specific team has now impacted HR as a whole. And it's taken a number of years to learn that and to admit to it. But once you really start analyzing yourself, your motivations, how you may be projecting those on others, and you start to think about everything that you've learned from your mistakes, there's an even greater confidence that begins to emerge, and it will make you a strong leader, no doubt.
Chris, I am so grateful that you took the time to look at this on multiple levels and share it with us, because it's really easy to talk about what that team did or how people interact. And what I really appreciate about what you just said is, hey, I learned some things for myself. And here's what I really learned, and here's how it really applies. Now I know that my strength can be my biggest weakness. And so I'm looking at that. I know that there's assumptions that I can make. So I'm taking some time to check out what they are and pause the impulsivity that could come with just acting on those assumptions straight away. So thank you for sharing how you've grown as a result of that.
No, I want to thank you for this opportunity, and on full transparency, some of the questions that you asked me forced me to reflect on that experience, and I gained new learning from doing that. And I'm glad that I'm able to share that. And I hope that for a few of your listeners, even if it's just one, if one listener walks away with a key learning from here and it helps them in their career and their leadership development, then this was a time well spent.
Thanks, Chris. And that's why we do it. And I'm expecting you to ask all your community college students to take a listen to Transformation Unfiltered. And before we share a little bit about how people can get in touch with you, I would love for you to share one piece of advice to either the younger Chris Ferrando or anybody that's coming up in this space and really wanting to do a great job, because I know that your heart and your head were always in the right place. And, you know, now you're even stronger because of the things you've learned from that experience. So what advice would you share?
Yeah, one of the things that I had started early in my career was I started a personal portfolio. And in that portfolio, I put every assessment that I ever took. And as an IO psychologist and an OD practitioner, I would spend a lot of time analyzing and assessing other people and developing a profile on them to better understand them. I realized that I needed to do the same for myself. So if I'm going to administer an assessment to somebody, I should have completed it myself. And so you just start compiling these assessments that you're taking. And I would encourage people that as you do this, take a moment to stop and reflect and look at how those assessment outcomes relate. And what is it telling you? What are you learning about yourself? And one of the things that I've come to realize is that when you stop and think about who you are, how you became who you are, why do you think the way that you do? Why do you dress the way that you do? Why do you eat the things that you do? Why are you interested in things that you do? And you think about what have been the most influential factors in my life. You'll develop a list that no one could ever replicate. And you realize that you are unique in unique ways. There is nobody on this earth like you. There has never been anyone on this earth like you. And there will never, ever be anyone on this earth like you. And so you should just be focused on not comparing yourself to others, but comparing yourself to you. How are you better today than you were yesterday? How will you be better tomorrow than you were last week? And one of my favorite proverbs is, there's nothing noble about being superior to another person. True nobility comes from being superior to a former self. And it has me reflecting on, how am I better today? So even here, how am I better at the end of this conversation than I was before the conversation?
Do you want to tell people? Have you come to that conclusion yet?
There's some of the reflections around recognizing where I was making assumptions and that me projecting my motivations and aspirations. But there will no doubt be some additional learnings that emerge as I reflect on our conversation today.
Yeah, I think a lifelong learner is someone I've always experienced you as. And thank you for sharing with the listeners out there that, hey, you are uniquely you, and there will never be another you in the past, in the future, never has been in the past. So really, all of us deserve a little bit of time to really get to know ourselves and think about, how can I feed myself so that I grow even more tomorrow? Because that's what everybody really deserves, is to grow into their best version of themselves. So thanks for the tips on that.
And if you even think about what you had said to me earlier, and I had said, can you Photoshop me? And you said, you are great just the way that you are. That's something that your listeners can take away, is that you are who you were meant to be, and that you shouldn't be comparing yourself with others, and to just take the opportunity to reflect on who you are, what your motivations are, what your aspirations are, and to pursue who you want to become, not necessarily what others want you to be.
Where can people find you when they want to say, hey, Chris, I need to know more?
So I would encourage anybody that's listening that wants to learn more to reach out to me on LinkedIn. Anyone is available to message me. And being pathologically extroverted, I'm always looking for an opportunity to connect with other people. And generally, once you connect with me on LinkedIn, I'll direct you to my work email so that we can continue the conversation.
Great. Thanks for spending time with us and sharing your unfiltered story, Chris. Folks, if you liked what you heard and you want to hear more from leaders who are ready to share some of the things that we wouldn't just talk about in the workplace, please don't hesitate to listen to Transformation Unfiltered. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform, where you'll hear from leaders who are sharing the unfiltered truth about how they got where they are today, just like Chris. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.